This is Maxine Ray, conducting an interview for the Civil Rights Project, sponsored by the Kentucky Oral History Commission, Kentucky Historical Society. I am interviewing Mrs. Greta Fishback at her home here in Warren County. Today's date is June 28, 2001. Now, Ms. Fishback, tell me your full name, please.
My name is Greta Parrish Fishback. That's my full name.
What is your date of birth, please?
And I was born September the 2nd, 1950.
Were you born in Warren County?
Born here in Warren County. Actually, I was born in Rockville. Mm-hmm. It was Warren County, but I was born in Rockville.
Okay. Your parents' name?
Parents' name. My father's name is Griffey Parrish, and my mother's name is Sylvia Louise Duncan Parrish.
What's your occupation?
And I am currently employed as a guidance counselor, and I have been teaching prior to that for 28 years. So my occupation is teacher.
Right. Now I'm going to ask you a little bit about your education.
I started elementary school in the newly constructed High Street High School. It had been constructed 1 year prior to my entering the school. So I entered in 1956. And it was an all first grade through 12th grade school, elementary and high school. And that was elementary school. And in 1965, High Street wasn't closed as a school, but all of the high school students were forced to attend Bonnerin High School because of the integration rules.
Where'd you go to college?
Oh, and then in 1967, I graduated from Bowling Green High. In 1967, I went to Western Kentucky. I enrolled in Western Kentucky University. And in 1971, I graduated from Western with a degree in BS degree in elementary education. And then I went back to Western. Shortly thereafter, you have to finish your master's degree in 5 years. And I finished a master's program in 1976. And then just recently, about 5 years ago, I finished a rank-one program at Western Kentucky University.
Good. Well, while you were at Western, or either in high school, did you go to a segregated high school? Was high school segregated?
Yes, High Street was all black. It was a strictly black high school. And in 19, I'm not exactly sure what year, but in 1960, I must have still been in eighth grade, so I would say it was probably in 1963. They gave all the students a choice. You could either go to Bowling Green High, to the high school there, and integrate, the black kids could, or we could stay there at High Street. And at that particular time, it was all black. In fact, we had blacks from Allen County, we had blacks from Scottsville. Now, just in the high school, now in the elementary, all the elementary black students were local students. But in the high school part of the program, there were students from surrounding counties because they were not attending the black high school, the white high schools in their respective counties.
Okay, so when you went to high school, it was segregated?
It was definitely segregated.
Okay.
All black.
But after you got to Western, was that your first time in an integrated school?
Actually, no. In 1965, High Street was closed as a high school, and all of the high school students, all the black high school students, were forced to go to Bowling Green High. Now, prior to that, we had choices, and some of the black students did go to Bowling Green High to start attending there, but not very many. And I think because of the rules, and I'm not sure at that time, I really didn't completely understand, because of the rules that, and not enough black students were going to Bowling Green High to consider it an integrated high school. So they forced all of the black students at High Street to then go to Bowling Green High. So I went to Bowling Green High, and that was really my first encounter with white teachers. I think there were a couple at High Street before it was, the high school was closed, but I didn't come in contact with any of them. I think Mr. Brown actually was the art teacher there at High Street for a brief moment. Mr. Brown, who was finally the superintendent of the Bowling Green City School. But Mr. Brown was the art teacher, but I never did have an art class under him. And there were a few white teachers. I did have Mr. Alsop, I remember, in the choir. And I can remember he really didn't like to come down there and teach choir. He left Bowling Green High and came to High Street and did choir. And I think he decided we really didn't know how to sing.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't think he enjoyed that experience. Uh-huh. And he was one I remember one day. He had us, he was going to put us in voices, I remember. And he would play chords on the piano. And you had to sing what he played. And I remember when it was my turn just really being nervous. And when I went to the piano, of course, I could sing what he played. It wasn't really a big deal. I could do it. And I remember him looking at me rather funny and said, you can hear music, can't you? You do that very, very well. And I said, oh, thank you. And it seemed like it was sort of something that he was surprised to find. Yeah, but we had to sing chords, I remember. And most of them did two chords and he had them to sit down. But I think I did about six before he asked me to sit. Just, and they, of course, got more difficult with each chord. So so that was kind of interesting. And then it went to Bowling Green High, and, of course, all the staff, I think they were forced to take all of the staff that would, the black staff that were teaching high school courses, did go to Bowling Green High. But it seemed like it worked out that all of my teachers that year were white. I don't know how that happened, except they had come down before the end of the school year in 65 and administered tests to all the high school students. They administered tests, and it seems like we took tests for 2 or 3 days, and they were using them for placement. And that was how they placed you in your programs. And when I got to Bowling Green High, I looked around, and I didn't see anybody I knew. Everybody was white. And I ended up being pretty much the only black student in mostly all of my classes, which was a new experience for me.
How did the teachers out there accept you or treat you? Or?
Well, now, I think on the most part they were all polite. But I think expectations were that we couldn't do, we couldn't perform, we weren't capable. And I don't know, I think they were sort of leery as to what we really could do. And my first encounter being in a new school, I never will forget it, being lost. And here I am looking for my class, and I walk around and I think I'm at the right place, and of course being nervous, this is my first year in a new high school, and I'm at this point was a junior, so it wasn't like being a freshman. I should have known where I was going and been uptown with what I was doing and be able to just walk right on in and take a seat. But I was lost, and so I had my program, my schedule in my hand, and I stopped at the door. And I asked the lady, it was an English teacher, was I in the right place? And she said, oh, I don't know, let me see your schedule. She said, probably not, let me see your schedule. And so I handed her my schedule, and she looked at it, and she said, yes, this is the class you're supposed to be in. As if she were surprised that I had been placed there. But I think, according to the test scores, that that's where I was supposed to be, because I could do what they could do. And I made A's just like they did.
Good. Now, after you got to Western, did you face any kind of blatant racial tensions or anything?
I think still, again, everybody was polite. And again, at Western in 1971, there were very, very few blacks on campus. Now, they, of course, had recruited Haskins and Smith and the basketball players, but I guess the rest of us just kind of came along by accident. And I did. I never will forget an English teacher, and I cannot remember her name, and it was my sophomore year in college, and it was the writing class after you take it was the English literature writing class, and we had to respond to a literature piece, write a response to the literature piece. And I had worked on it so much that my mother said, if you change that one more time. And I just kept rewording it and rewriting it because I'd read it and something would be wrong. I said, no, let me fix this. And I guess I worked on it for 2 weeks, and it was time to turn it in on time. And at the end of the period, the teacher asked, and I still do not remember her name, asked me and two other white guys to stay after class. And, you know, I had this big A-plus on this paper. I'm thinking she's going to give me this major pat on my back and tell me what a great job I had done. And the two guys that stayed were curious as to why I stayed, because one of the boys looked at me and he says, why did she ask you to stay? And I said, well, I don't know. And he said, well, we didn't turn our papers in. He says, you got your paper back, didn't you? I said, yeah, I've got an A-plus on it. He said, I wonder why she wanted you to stay. I said, well, I have no idea. So when she dismissed the class, and I think one of the other students asked her a question after class about an assignment or something, and so she turned around to us And she turned to the two white guys and she says, now you all have not turned in your assignments. They'll be due in whatever the next class period was. I think it was Tuesday, Thursday, and they were due in that next class period. And she says, and I'll dock you a letter grade. And they left. And then she turned to me and she said, and who wrote your paper? And I looked at her kind of puzzled, but when you think about it, I was probably 17 years old. I just kind of looked puzzled. And of course, at that point, I kind of smiled and said, well, I did. And she says, oh, you did? She said, and I do not remember my 102 teacher's name, but she asked me who I had for 102. And I told her. And I had heard when I had 102 that this was the lady not to have. All the basketball players had dropped out of her class because she was too tough. She was the hardest lady on campus, and if you got her, you're supposed to get out of her class any way possible because she was tough. But I had survived her class, and I had an A in her class. So she asked me, I told her who I had, and she says, oh, what grade did you get? And I said, I made an A. And when I said that, she says, oh, well, I guess you did write this paper. And she handed it back to me, and I left. And
How did you feel when she did that to you?
I think today I would have probably hit the ceiling and called the dean or the president, but that would have been 1968, I just kind of, just really didn't know how to take it because I just wasn't, I don't know, I just really didn't know how to respond to it. I guess it really caught me off guard. Now today I would have really, yeah, because time on task and stuff, and I probably would have just giving her peace of my mind, or probably would have reported her, but I never reported her. I just went on and just thought it was strange that she thought I wasn't capable of writing it, and I had written it. My mother was proof.
Did you have any other kind of incidents at Western?
And then later on, and interestingly enough, I ran into this lady at a workshop. She remembered me, and I guess she had good memories of me. I guess mine were kind of tainted because it was near the end of my studies at Western. It was probably in late 70 or maybe early 71, and it was a statistics class, and it was near the end of my training and everything, and it was how to do numbers and rank students in classes and do the bell curve and all of those things that you do to evaluate students, and that was basically the gist of the course. I can't remember the title, and I don't remember her name either, but what we did after instruction, she gave us a test, and she says, this is how you can rank your students with the test scores. And she took her test scores and ranked us. And after the ranking, I was second in the whole class. And there were probably about 30 kids in there. And two or three of them were friends of mine, because by then, the enrollment was increasing. And then you weren't the only black person in your class. There were two or three others that you kind of knew, and everybody kind of knew each other because there were so few of us, too. And I was in with two other girls that I knew, but one was a really good friend of mine. And she had signed up for the class so we would be together because she said she'd let me help her. But anyway, so she ranked us and after the first test. And then for some reason, and again, not being totally aware of what's going on, she moved the girl. I sat behind the girl that was in first. The girl that sat in front of me was ranked first. I sat behind the white girl. And she had told us, we had shared earlier, and she had told us she was valedictorian of her class. In our first class meeting, we had to share something about us. And I had found out through that she was valedictorian of her class. And she always did well. So she was ranked first. I was ranked second. And I sat behind her. So in the course of the class, and I guess this was a justification for the teacher too, you know, you can move students around, blah, blah, blah. So she had her to move away from me. And when we took the second test, now she didn't move my friend who was on my right, she stayed by me. But on the second test, she did the same ranking, and she ranked us according to that test. And I think what she did was put the scores together and ranked them that way. But after the second test, I was ranked first, and this other girl, I think, was second. And so after class, I mean, she announced it to the class, and of course I'm proud again because I'm second, but it was a math class. I'm good at math. I knew I could do math. And, you know, I wasn't surprised I was ranked first, but I did. I'm sure I had a nice big smile on my face when she said I was first. You know, you look around, the whole room is practically white and you're first. That's really an accomplishment.
Yes.
So after class, she didn't say it during class. After class, when everybody was leaving, she stopped me and my friend as we were going out the door. And she said to her, she says, does she always do this well? And my friend said, yes, she does. She makes me sick. And we went on out the door. So, you know, when you think about it in terms of running into any racial encounters, at that moment, I still didn't think about that being a put down. But in essence, it really was. And it was subtle. And like I said, they were, for the most part, really nice people, but just still those undercurrents. And one other thing I thought about is, because you had asked me about interviewing, was after I started my master's work, I was in a class, and this would have been, because I finished my master's degree in 76, this was probably in 75, and I think the hype in 75 was that they were going to start busing white children to integrate the schools, because from 65 to 75, it had kind of fallen apart, and it was now what they considered white schools here, black schools here. It was segregated again. So what they were going to do was bus the white kids back into the inner cities for segregation. And there was a big outcry nationwide about this was not a good thing to do, busing those kids for miles in the morning, miles in the afternoon, just simply to change numbers and those kinds of things. And there were lots of white people that were totally, totally against it. And I don't know how it came up, but it came up in my class. And there was lots of discussion in this particular class about how wrong this was to do this, how it was detrimental to the kids, it wasn't going to be good for their studies, and it wasn't going to be the best educational opportunities for them, and they just thought it was awful. And I remember sitting through the whole class, and the professor kept looking at me, and sitting through the whole class, and he kept watching because I kept squirming. And I'd shift from one side of my chair to the other, and I thought, oh, I cannot believe this. So finally I spoke up. And I said, you all are so concerned about these white kids being bused. Where were you all when they were busing the black kids from one county to another so they could go to segregated school? If it was wrong, if it's wrong now, then it was wrong then, and nobody said a word. And finally, the professor at that point said, well, I wondered how long you were going to sit there and stay quiet. I said, well, I'd had all I could take, and I had to say something. But nobody had an answer. The interesting thing was that nobody had an answer because it was wrong then and it was wrong years ago too, you know. So that was one thing that I thought of that I didn't didn't mention earlier.
Good. Well, good. But do you belong to any kind of civil organizations or?
Well, now, actually, no. I've not been an active NAACP member. I do belong to a local club here that's, and I guess it's predominantly black, but I don't know if we've been doing any black movements, George Washington Carver Center. And I am a member of AKA, but as far as any of the civic organizations, I'm not an active member.
Can you think of anything else you want to say that I haven't told you? You're going to tell me about a babysitter?
Oh, the babysitter. Okay. I had... my first son was born, his birthday is in October of 72, and he was born, and my mother-in-law kept him from October until school was out the next year. But I decided that that was too much of an imposition on her because she was a minister's wife and she liked to go to church and things, and that was an imposition on her. So I decided that I was going to have to find daycare for him. So in the summer, I decided I'd start early so I'd have a place when school started in August. And so in the summer, I just started calling around looking for a place for him to stay. He was 9 months old, very mature 9 months old, could sit up and just walk around and kind of take care of himself, hold his head up, do all kinds of things. Well, of course, mothers are always proud, and I thought he was a mature 9-month old. He might not have been that mature, but I thought he was. But anyway, I started calling around, and I called, and it was College Hill Daycare. It's no longer open. I called that particular daycare because I found out I made too much money for the one that was located on 3rd Street, and there was another one that was for low income. And I found out I didn't qualify for those, so I'm looking frantically for a daycare center because school's going to start in about 4 weeks, and I needed to find a place. So I called the daycare center and asked on the phone if they had openings. I told them about this mature 9-month-old. And she said, yeah, they had openings. They'd be more than happy. She told me how much it cost and everything. And I said, well, now I'd like to check and see what kind of because I hadn't been in the place. I'd like to look around, see what kind of facilities you have, because this is my first child, and you know, you want to take really good care of him. So she said, oh yeah, you're welcome to come anytime you'd like. Just come on in, drop on in. You don't need an appointment. And I said, oh, okay, fine. So the next day, I take my nine-month-old and drive to the daycare center. And when I walk in the door, she looks up the lady that's there. And I made a mistake when I made the call. I didn't get the lady's name, but I didn't know it was a mistake at the time. So when I walked in, this lady greeted me, and I said, how you doing? And she said, oh, are you looking for a job? And I said, no, I had talked with someone yesterday about an opening for a 9-month-old. And I was just coming in to look around the place and see the kind of things and facilities you have and just kind of look around. She says, oh, we don't have any openings. She said, I don't know who you talked to, but they must have made a mistake. She says, that we don't have any openings for 9-month-old. And I said, oh, you don't? She says, well, you're welcome to look around. I said, well, okay, I'll look around. So I kind of looked around, guess done, because I thought, well, no, yesterday you had opening, today you don't. Who in the world did I talk to? But I, like I said, I never did get, and for all I know, it could have been the same lady. I don't really know. But anyway, as I was leaving, she stopped me. She's really nice and polite. She came, she stopped me. She says, ma'am, she says, you're looking for daycare center. I said, yeah, I need one in about 3 weeks. She says, well, I've gone through. She says, and here's a list of some people that I wrote down. She says, and they'll take anybody's child. So she handed me the list. She handed me the list, and I took the list, and I really did call. I called. I went by one of the places that she gave me. It was the one that's on, I guess it's still there, on Morgantown Road. I went by there, but then I called the other one. After I went by the one on Morgantown Road, I thought, okay, I guess I'll just call this next one. And when I called her, I told her I was black, because I felt like that I needed to tell her, and she was kind of insulted because I said, do I need to tell you that I'm black while I'm talking to you so you can decide whether you have room for me or not? And she asked me when I got out there why I felt like that was necessary. I said, well, I should have told the other one that I was black, and apparently she didn't know I was until she saw me. And when she saw me, she didn't have a space for my child simply because we were black.
Oh, my goodness. Now, you're older now. Then, did you make any kind of noise about that?
Somebody said I should have made him, let him stay one day just to prove a point. And I think they did have a black child staying there. Hmm. In fact, I think, but she looked white.
Oh.
And I don't know if they knew she was black. Mom and Dad both could have passed for white people, so I don't know if they knew she was black or not, but she was. And no, I didn't make any noise. Somebody said you should have reported it, and I should have, because it wasn't right. But I decided that I would not have let my child stay 10 minutes, and I took my child and left and went on. So I didn't make any noise. But no, now you, when you think about it, I was still young. I was 22. And back in 71, 72, I think black people, for the most part, except for the Dr. Kings, were kind of quiet and soft-spoken and just kind of took those things in stride and made up their minds as to whether it was a place they'd go back to or whether it was a place they wouldn't, and just kind of went on. But they did happen. They really did happen.
I'm not surprised. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm surprised, because I'm not. I'm not surprised that that happened. Well, if you don't have anything else, I'll thank you for your interview.
I can't think of anything else right off the top of my head.
Good.
So, I hope I've been of help.
Yes.
And hope I've said something that'll be beneficial to somebody.
Good. Yeah, I think so. Thank you for your time.